fellow law nerds, welcome to a special episode of Boom Lawyered, brought to you by the legal journalism team that just really wants to talk to you about these fake pregnancy clinics and the lying liars that they are. I'm Imani Gandhi, and I'm here with Jessica Mason Piclo, Rewire.News' Vice President of Law and Courts and our resident court whisperer. Today, the Supreme Court heard oral arguments in NIFLA, National Institute of Family Life Advocates, v. Becerra. It's a case about the California Reproductive Fact Act and its requirement that clinics disclose that they are not licensed, if they are not licensed, and disseminate information about California's publicly funded family planning services. So, Jessica, let's get into this a bit. First, I think the most burning question on everyone's mind is, how much did Clarence Thomas have to say during oral arguments today?
He would not shut up.
I can only
imagine.
That's
the headline from the story, is that Justice Thomas would not show up. No, as to be expected, Justice Clarence Thomas did not say a single word. And for folks who are getting caught up to speed on the court, that's pretty much his MO. Justice Thomas doesn't say anything. And today, he was right on brand.
Awesome. So tell us a little bit about what is at stake in this case.
Sure. So the law is the case is a challenge to the California Reproductive Fact Act that you mentioned, but it's broader than that because there are two other states, Illinois and Hawaii, that have similar laws on the books, and a broad ruling that insulates crisis pregnancy centers, these fake clinics, from the kinds of disclosures that California and other states have required really would open the door to a whole host of ways that they could further cloak and deceive people and to get them in the door. And so while that wasn't an issue that the justices dove into a lot during oral arguments, it's definitely out there and I think one that deserves some attention.
Did the justices talk at all about the efforts and the scientific bases that the California legislature used in concocting this law?
No, they didn't. One of the things I would say that was the most surprising, and maybe most surprising isn't the right way to say it, most disappointing and sort of expected, but yet nonetheless, like, you know, kind of hoping that they'll get it right, is that with the exception of Justice Sotomayor, the court really did not seem to be focused on much except for the burden on the clinics that would have to comply with the law. So when we're talking about the fact that these clinics see, you know, hundreds of thousands of patients in California alone, and then you sort of extrapolate that out nationwide, the idea that, you know, there are poor women who are really sort of in the throes of this battle, they were completely erased from the conversation altogether, and instead focused on the fact that, you know, a crisis pregnancy center would have to disclose that they, even if they offer ultrasounds, they will not counsel or refer for abortions.
But isn't that not what the FACT Act requires? It just requires them to point out to their clients that there are these services that are available, publicly funded from California. So the law doesn't target CPCs and require them to say, oh, we don't offer abortion services. It just says, you can go over here and get all of these family planning services. Did that make any difference to the justices?
It really didn't, in part because they seem to be buying into this argument that Alliance Defending Freedom and the conservatives are making that this law is gerrymandered. And what I mean by that is that the statute is on its face supposed to apply to everybody, but has certain carve-outs for it. For example, clinics that take Medi-Cal patients, that's the state-sponsored Medicaid program, they don't have to post that requirement. And so ADF and some of the other justices said, well, you know, doesn't that mean that it's basically, you know, picking and choosing who it applies to? And I mean, sure. Okay.
But on that, like, doesn't make any sense because if, I mean, those clinics are already publicly funded clinics. So why would they need to put up a notice about California offering?
Right.
Solution? Am I getting something
right.
wrong?
Right. Well, and this was exactly the point that California made, which was, well, okay, so the state identified a problem, and that is certain businesses are targeting low-income women and women in rural areas, patients who are isolated from a variety of factors. They're targeting them for misinformation and inaccurate information. And so we're going to go to the sources of that information and make sure that they get a phone number. I mean, really, that's what we're talking about. We're not even talking about like a list of clinics or doctors or anything like that. It's, you know, you qualify for these services if you meet a certain income threshold, by the way. And one of the things that was really interesting in oral arguments, and I think this State of California did a good job on, and I hope it picks up with Justice Kennedy here, although, you know, I am suspicious that it will, is that in Planned Parenthood v. Casey, right, this big abortion rights case, that the court there upheld a whole bunch of disclosures that had nothing to do with abortion. The disclosures were things like the you know, putative father of your developing pregnancy, your child will have some financial obligations potentially, or, you know, it should you choose to carry your pregnancy to term, then that means that you are available for other state resources potentially. The Supreme Court in Planned Parenthood v. Casey said those kinds of disclosures were all fine and dandy. In this case, ADF and conservatives are saying that similar types of requirements here, which are actually less onerous when you think about it. I mean, right. It's not even like these places are having to say, oh, by the way, you go, you know, down the street and Planned Parenthood will offer you contraception. It's nothing like that. You know, they're arguing that doing that in of itself is targeting their speech. And it doesn't make any sense, quite frankly, because what they're trying to do is make an argument that they're being targeted for their religion. But the court didn't specifically take up the free exercise, the religious exercise question in this case. ADF wanted them to, but the court didn't grant cert on that. So this is the conservatives' way to argue a point that the court tried to tell them they couldn't argue. It's shady as shit.
I just want to back up for a minute. So Planned Parenthood versus Casey, in that case, there were a bunch of mandatory disclosures that Pennsylvania instituted, and the court said some were okay and some were fine. So here we seem to have a situation where these anti-choicers want to have their cake and eat it too, right? They want to be able to force doctors to disclose false information to clients, but don't want to be forced to disclose to their clients actual true information. So how is the court going to square that?
Well, you basically just made the same point that Justice Breyer made in oral arguments, except he called it what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander, which I always thought it was what's good for the goose is good for the gander, but whatever. Justice Breyer is an odd dude, man. He is an odd dude. But this was his exact point, which is, you know, effectively ADF and anti-choice shops, you guys are trying to have it both ways. You're trying to, you know, say that you have all of this right to speak abortion, speak whenever you want to, except when it's in the context of making sure that potential clients and patients have access to a full range of information. And, you know, during oral arguments, one of the greatest moments was Justice Sotomayor really broke this down. And I will say again and again and again, she is by far the strongest advocate progressives have on the court. She just gets it. She is the one who drilled down immediately that this is a case about taking advantage of poor low-income patients and the practices that go into that. And she went through and basically read off a description of one of the websites of one of the plaintiffs, one of the crisis pregnancy centers in the lawsuit, and, you know, said, well, look, you go to the homepage and there's a picture of a woman and it looks like she's wearing a lab coat and a stethoscope, and they're talking about all of these medical services that they provide. And this was one of the unlicensed clinics, you know? Right. So she's like, if I already have, you know, limited time and limited resources, and I'm stressed the hell out because I find myself with an unplanned pregnancy, if I take a look at this website, I'm going to assume that I'm getting some kind of medical advice. Maybe I'm not, maybe I will even be sophisticated enough to say and to be able to see that this isn't a doctor, but still like a nurse practitioner or something. I mean, you know, a lot of people who go get their, you know, birth control pills refilled, like they don't necessarily see a doctor each time, right? Like we have levels of staff that do that. And so she really got to the package of deception that is at play here. And ADF and the conservative justices did all they could to sort of push her off of that. But she held her ground.
So as always, I think we know Kennedy's probably going to be the swing vote. Were you able to glean any insight from his questions about how he's going to come down on this?
Yeah, he's super sympathetic to the CPCs here.
Really?
He tried to push out. He really is. And I mean, I think it falls into this whole, like, issue that he's has about, I mean, you know, he doesn't like abortion. I don't care that he voted in Casey to uphold Roe and then voted, I'm sure, holding his nose in Whole Woman's Health, V. Hellerstedt, to do the same thing. But what he made very clear here is that it felt like this was really mean to evangelicals. I mean, the hypothetical he kept, oh, it was ridiculous, Imani. I mean, you probably would have thrown your notebook. I'm not even kidding. one of the hypotheticals he had is, you know, so if I am a pro-life pregnancy center and I want to put an advertisement out that says, you know, pregnant, confused, come in for a pregnancy test and, you know, we're pro-life and have the phone number, does the state of California require a disclosure that we're not a licensed medical facility? And the law pretty clearly says that it does if, you know, it's doing certain things. One of them is providing pregnancy tests. And, to Justice Kennedy, you would think that that was, you know, the same thing as making them actually, like, sign people up for a free abortion right then and there. Because, God, if only that could happen. Can you imagine? That's like my utopia. Right. Walk in for a pregnancy test here. Let me sign you up for your free abortion if you need it. But that was really a problem for him. And it's something that I noticed too in the press pit when we were getting ready is that I think, you know, this, and Imani, we've talked about this, that, you know, there's a lot of framing about this as an abortion rights case, and it kind of is an abortion rights case, but it's not. It's really a truth and advertising case. This is really about what kind of power and what kind of authority does the state have to make sure that certain services are delivered at a certain level of trustworthiness. And we actually have another really good example of this that you and I know about in terms of lawyers, right? The states regulate the practice of medicine, the practice of law, what lawyers can disclose in that all the time. But yet again, you say the word abortion and all of a sudden it becomes a whole big fucking speech thing, excuse me, when it's not really what that is, right? And so in the press pit were, you know, informed journalists, all men, talking about the fact that we get lots of disclosures in the medical context, right? Pick up a prescription. What does your prescription say on the back of it? It says, don't operate heavy machinery. Make sure and take with food and water. Right. It's got disclosures. They're like, but maybe this is different because it's abortion. No, abortion is healthcare. It's not different. It's only different if you think abortion is icky. And if you think abortion is icky, I don't care. It still makes it healthcare.
Right. And if you think abortion is icky, then maybe you shouldn't be covering cases about it. Like, if you don't understand the basic concepts of abortion rights as a human right, then perhaps you should go into some other form of work. Because the last thing we need is more men trying to mansplain reproductive rights for pregnant people. It's truly absurd.
Yeah, that was the entire hour of oral arguments. There was not a single female attorney arguing at all.
Are you serious?
No, it was all men. It was men from California. It was men from ADF. And it was men from the Department of Justice, which is really interesting because, you know, this is a case that doesn't involve the federal government at all. But the Trump administration decided it was going to jump in anyway and say, hey, you know what? Technically, we're not on the side of any particular party, but let's go ahead and put the full weight of our authority behind Alliance Defending Freedom here. And I think
I was going to say, well, isn't that because there are a lot of ADF people who are now in HHS?
Winner, winner, chicken dinner. That's exactly right. We have so many folks from the Alliance Defending Freedom in the administration, including the top dog at the Solicitor General's office, Noel Francisco. Now, he sent his underling, Jeffrey Wall, to argue today, and Wall did okay. He's a good attorney. But I think, you know, I mean, I think it's important to figure out what is DOJ's motives here. Why, if they do not have a dog in the fight, so to speak, are they chiming in and taking 15 minutes? And I think what's really at stake here is that they see the sort of slippery slope argument. That's what lawyers talk about when it's like, oh, so, is, you know, we have to draw a principle, otherwise we go down the slippery slope and everything is, you know, regulated speech, which is kind of what they were saying. And it honestly, at the end of the day, made no sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's Trump's DOJ.
So talking about the regulated speech, did any of the justices talk about the difference between commercial speech and political speech?
They didn't directly. Kennedy did the thing where you sort of, you know, talk about it without talking about it, in the sense that for him, even saying the word abortion is political speech. because people have opinions about it. You know, I mean, but that would be like saying I have opinions on the tax code, so therefore that's political speech. I mean, you can see just how ridiculous that gets.
Yeah.
Right.
It seems to me that ADF and anti-choices have done a really good job at making people believe that something as simple as a healthcare issue has become wrapped up in the First Amendment. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to me. And I was really hoping that the justices would be able to pierce that bullshit, but it doesn't sound like anyone but Sotomayor did.
Well, hold on to your butt, because this is how Harris, who argued for the CPCs, closed his argument here, which was, and this is almost as direct a quote as I can get, as writing as fast as you have to, since we don't get technology in the courtroom. But we should not politicize the practice of medicine in this way, Harris said, clutching his pearls to the justices as he closed his argument. I mean, seriously, they were out there saying,
what? We shouldn't politicize healthcare. They're the ones politicizing healthcare. What the fuck?
Yeah, that's... And then the buzzer went and we all had to stand up and be quiet. And so I was doing the internal scream like that. There's the dude on Twitter who's like the eternal scream. That was inside my head.
Jesus. So it seems to me that the court is actually looking at this as a First Amendment case and not even really touching the truth in advertising part. I mean, are we really just going to now allow corporations or nonprofits or whatever to lie to poor people?
Well, it certainly is getting there. I guess if you're lying about comprehensive reproductive health care, then the court seems to be pretty sympathetic to that. But I mean, that falls into a really huge umbrella. We talked about this in one of the other episodes, I think, in that, you know, that can get into things like so-called conversion therapy, right? I think it's important to remember that conservatives have this big push to deliver social services under the gauze of religion. And so while they're talking about this as abortion, it's really, and I hate to sort of use the analogy, but it fits. It's a Trojan horse for a whole lot of other things that they can get their way into. Think about disclosures related to climate science, for example. What we've seen conservatives do, the conservative movement broadly do very well, is to take the abortion issue and mobilize evangelicals on it and then have the ability to blow it out into other areas. And I really feel like these CPC cases are that way, because if they can successfully challenge a state disclosure law that says places that aren't comprehensive reproductive healthcare clinics have to disclose that they're not comprehensive reproductive healthcare clinics, then that goes for places that you know, offer only a particular type of counseling, of mental health counseling, of substance abuse counseling, those kinds of things. I mean, we have to remember that religious conservatives are in the very big business of delivering social services.
Right. Well, I mean, also when you think about it, I mean, if you want to talk slippery slopes, so now are we saying that, for example, stores that claim to serve only halal meat or stores that claim to serve kosher meat, but when in fact they aren't, they're not supposed to disclose that to their clientele?
Well, I mean, you know, that's a really good question. And one of the arguments that the right has made on this is that that's effectively, like doing that is effectively mushing together the free speech and the free religious exercise issues here. And again, like, not to be too picky of a lawyer, but this is one of the things they teach you in law school, is to issue spot. What's the issue? And here in NIFLA v. Becerra, the issue isn't does this impinge on religious exercise rights, but is this a free speech issue? And so, right, you know, let me back up for a second. Commercial speech is speech, right? I mean, of course, this is a free speech case. It's a First Amendment case because we're talking about disclosures, and disclosures are words. So words, and words are speech. So First Amendment, right? But it's really sort of what's the level of scrutiny? What power does the court have and to undo these laws? And what California has said is that it really doesn't matter what level of scrutiny we have. We have a really good reason for enacting this, and gave their, which goes back to your first question, Imani, which is, you know, did they get into the evidence? And one of the reasons they really didn't is because, and this is another little nitpicky lawyer point, is at the trial court level and the appellate court level, this this case was decided as a preliminary injunction. So that means that they hadn't developed a record yet. It hadn't gone to trial. There wasn't evidence. So the CPCs are sitting here saying we have all of this burden to comply with this law, but they didn't actually have to put any evidence in to show that burden yet. So that could be the difference. Breyer seemed to be upset about that. Even Gorsuch seemed upset about that.
Wait, what? You know, he was Gorsuch? Right. Gorsuch seemed upset about something?
Yeah, I know. So I don't know that I believe
what
it.
Can you explain what Gorsuch, what his, like, what did he have to say? How terrible was he?
Oh, he's so, like, he just smirks. It's really, like, he's got resting smirk face. And I say that as a smirker, but he does. He's got resting smirk face. He seemed to sort of latch on to this point that Breyer made, which was there wasn't enough evidence. So maybe what the Supreme Court should do is instead of issuing a ruling, kick it back down to the lower courts to develop the record. And then there would be something for the court to decide, really sort of what's the burden on clinics here. And Gorsuch sort of bought into that.
So that's good
but
news,
I don't
right?
buy it for second. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it is. And maybe it would give him an out. But I'm suspicious of everything he does. And the reason I'm giving him some side eye on this one is because he's like, I'm very concerned about the record. I mean, as far as I know, this is like a $9,000 a month advertising tax on these places. And I'm like, really?
Please. Especially when they're spending $18,000 a month, as I mentioned in our most recent episode, on these pay-per-click advertisings with Google so that they can game the system. I mean, if they're talking about having it be a $9,000 tax, maybe stop gaming Google and save some of that money. I mean, it's just, it seems rather ludicrous. It seems so obvious to me that this is about not lying to pregnant people. I find it really hard to believe that that didn't really seem to play into oral arguments, except for with Sotomayor.
Yeah, it really, I mean, it was specifically with Justice Sotomayor who really drilled it down. And, you know, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg was the first out of the gates with a question, and it was a fair question, but it was a very Ruth Bader Ginsburg question, which was, well, what if this was an abortion clinic that, you know, that we forced to put up a disclosure that says we don't offer adoption services? Would that be okay? And of course, you know, the clinics had some reason why that wouldn't be okay. But that was also such a crappy analogy, I thought. Like, that's not really what this is about. People don't walk into an abortion clinic or a comprehensive reproductive healthcare clinic thinking that they're they assume they're walking in, they think they're going into a clinic. Right?
Right.
CPCs are set up to look like clinics. That's cosplay. Like, you called it exactly perfectly when you said that. And so that's why this case, and I like, even as I'm like sputtering into the microphone right now about this, it makes me so mad because it's the worst kind of circular logic.
Right. And I also mentioned, you know, on our podcast the other day, the argument that Ilya Shapiro had made about how, you know, the same sort of thing that, you know, abortion clinics aren't required to post notices about adoption. But that's because abortion clinics aren't in the business of lying to their patients. So you walk into an abortion clinic and they're going to tell you everything that you need to know, because the last thing these clinics want to do is to be coercing or encouraging people to get abortions if they're not sure that they want one. So abortion clinics don't lie.
Right.
You know, these CPC clinics are by definition liars.
And California, I thought, did a really good job on this point, because they, you know, the attorney for the state of California mentioned that, you know, yes, what the disclosure is that the state of California has some financial services available for low-income patients. That's the extent of the disclosure. And those financial services are available regardless of what the pregnancy outcome is. So, you know, which I thought really cut to the heart of the plaintiff's argument here, which is, you know, they assume that a disclosure is going to drive someone to have an abortion. Maybe it was. Maybe it would. Maybe it's not. You know, I mean, the idea is that it's their choice. But what I think it shows is that they're really fearful that when armed with the full range of information, that patients make informed choices that fit their needs and not a political agenda.
Right, right. And so in terms of the sort of rhetoric around abortion, I mean, we talked about this earlier about how absurd it is that in almost every other context, these people are more than happy to get in people's faces and yell about the evils of abortion. But when it comes to someone walking into their clinic, they're not willing to tell that person about the evils of abortion. They're willing to lie to them and make them think that they're going to get information about abortion when they're not. So I just, did the justices address that at all? Or was there any sense of them recognizing the hypocrisy of the anti-choicers argument?
Sotomayor did really perfectly, yeah. Because the plaintiffs started out by saying, well, it's really important to note that we're not offering medical services. And she was like, hold up. What the hell do you think an ultrasound
is? Wait a
minute. What do you think a pregnancy test is? Well, you know, and because
what the fuck is an ultrasound?
Yeah, the argument that they were making was that the disclosures in Casey that we talked about, right, that those disclosures were triggered by the imminent availability and delivery of a specific medical procedure, in that case, abortion, so that was information going to inform a patient's choice about abortion. But it's the same damn thing, Imani!
It's so frustrating. It's really frustrating. So what did John Roberts have to say? What do you think his deal is?
He was kind of rude. Normally, he lets the parties and the justices sort of speak, but he got a little snippy with, I think it was Justice Kagan. It might have been Justice Sotomayor. I was sitting behind one of the big ass pillars, and so I was like straining my neck as much as I could, and they were talking over each other. So at one point it was either Kagan or Sotomayor, because they were both talking, and Roberts specifically stepped in and was like, hey, would you let the attorney speak, cutting off a line of questioning, which is rude as hell.
Really?
Yeah.
That is really rude and unusual.
Yeah. And I mean, normally if it gets real heated, then that would happen, but like these weren't even heated exchanges. I mean, you know, the only people who were getting real hepped up about this were Justice Sotomayor, and going through all of the deceptive targeting that goes into these places, and why the state of California would have a reason for wanting to regulate these facilities. And Justice Alito is pretty teed off too about the idea that pro-life, what he called pro-life clinics, would have to disclose a pro-abortion message. But that's pretty much to be expected. I mean, and frankly, Alito's kind of always in a state of permanent pissed off. Like, if Gorsuch is permanently smirking, Alito's permanently scowling.
Right. Well, it should be interesting how Alito rules, considering he was the appellate court judge in Casey, right?
You'd think that there'd be some
consistency. How is he going to square that in his mind?
Yeah. I didn't get the sense that the distinction that the clinics wanted to make between that sort of triggering argument, which, you know, and I won't get too much into the weeds here, but that triggering argument is the same exact argument that they made in the birth control cases when they were trying to avoid insurance coverage for birth control. And they said that, right, you know, that if they covered in birth control, if they complied with the ACA, that they would be facilitating sin. All those sluts would go get birth control pills and have sex without having babies. That was a burden.
And just for our listeners, real quick, we're talking about the birth control benefit cases, specifically the ones where employers or schools that offer health insurance plans were complaining that simply filling out a form saying we do not offer these services would trigger the government jumping in and offering them instead. So that means somehow by filling out a form, they were being complicit in sin, which is ludicrous. But that was the argument that they made.
And that's the analogy that they made here. I mean, it's basically, you know, a copy and paste type of version of that argument here. It didn't seem to get quite as much traction. Again, the court was really sort of focused on the burden, which might be good news for us. If they're focused on the burden, and if the court is concerned that there's not enough of a developed record, then that wouldn't be a straight loss. It would probably mean that the case got kicked back to the lower courts to develop that record. And everything we've seen is that California had every damn good reason to pass this law. I mean, you know, they've got hundreds of crisis pregnancy centers in the state and, you know, a fraction of the number of abortion clinics. And so this is a real need here.
So I guess that my final question to you, and it sounds like to me I already know the answer, but in terms of how the court is going to rule, it seems like the best scenario for us, for the repro rights community, would be for them to kick the case back down to develop a fuller record. And then once it gets back up, hope that data nerd Stephen Breyer just steps in and is like, whoa, 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 guys. And then examines the data, sort of how he did in Whole Woman's Health, mm-hmm. and comes to a conclusion that these CPCs are full of crap.
Yeah, that would be a good outcome. I mean, Justice Breyer, by way of background, is a former tax attorney, so he loves numbers and equations and stuff like that, which is one of the reasons why the Holman Health decision was so good, because it had all of that data and evidence. And so that would be a good outcome for us here.
Obviously a better outcome would be for them to just smack the CPCs down and tell them to stop lying, but sounds like that's not what's going to happen right now.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's always tough to read the tea leaves out of arguments because the justices just sort of pick, you know, and choose what they want to focus on. And sometimes that's to confirm a bias and sometimes it's to try and change their mind. I could also see them splitting the difference between the requirements for the licensed and unlicensed facilities. The unlicensed notice that you just have to say, hey, I'm unlicensed, even though Kennedy was kind of grouchy about that. I don't necessarily know that means that he would strike that per se. I mean, you know, he's also just kind of grouchy.
But also, how can you be grouchy about a sign that tells customers that they're about to enter a healthcare clinic that is not populated by doctors?
Yeah.
That seems basic to me.
Yeah, it is pretty basic. And this is where he gets into his sympathies of that it was targeting evangelicals and folks based on their religious viewpoint, which is what, you know, that mushing of speech and religion that the clinics here are trying to get away with. You know, he bought into that. I don't know what that'll do on his vote. I don't feel like he's on our side right now. I would think at a minimum, the non-disclosure part would be fine. But I don't know, man. I mean, it was really upsetting to hear, again, I shouldn't be surprised, but that doesn't make it any less upsetting. It was really upsetting to be in the courtroom for an hour and have only one person of all of these very learned people even show a whiff of concern of the patients who are being deceived here.
Right, right.
Nobody gives a shit about poor people.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think we know that, but it's very disturbing, and especially when it comes to the delivery of healthcare services, whether you're talking about Hyde or whether you're talking about the Hyde Amendment, which precludes federal funding being used for abortion, even though it should, or whether you're talking about CPCs targeting young, vulnerable people of color. It just really does seem like screwing over poor people, screwing over people of color is just fine. Mm-hmm. And the only ally we seem to have on the court is one of the people of color. And the other one just never says anything anyway. So I don't understand.
Ugh. Yeah. Well, so we won't end up hearing anything from the court probably until the end of the summer. So the court term ends at the end of June. And so I would expect that we get a decision since they argued the case late towards the end of that. But if, you know, if they do somehow say, hey, you know what, this is a messy case and we don't want to deal with it, they have an easy way to kick it back in on this lack of an evidentiary record. And so we could see something quicker if that's the case. If we're in the early weeks of June and we still don't have a decision, then I'm going to get sweaty and say we're probably losing.
Oh, gosh. Well, I think that this and what Masterpiece Cake Shop are probably the two big cultural issue cases. And those usually tend to come out at the last minute, right?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Oi.
Oi is right.
Well, do you have any other comments? Anything that I may have missed? Anything you want to mention before we wrap up?
Again, you know, I would just really, I guess I want to close on two points. One is that this is a case where the media has not done a good job of identifying the issue. And it's bought into the framing that this is an abortion rights case when it's an abortion adjacent case is how I would describe it. And sure, it involves abortion rights in the sense that it's access, but this isn't about the right to an abortion, you know, which the state of California is like, hello, fundamental right, like we have some power in regulating this here. And then the other is that, you know, again, we're talking about, I just think it's really important to center the people who are affected by this. And the people who are affected by this are people who are geographically isolated, who are low income, who, you know, maybe don't have English as a primary language. I mean, one of the concerns that the justices had was about all the language requirements, 13 different languages. Well, yeah, there are a lot of different languages spoken in California. It's a pretty diverse place.
Wait, They were complaining about having to post the notice in multiple languages when California is one of the most diverse states with a lot of foreign language, primarily foreign language speaking people.
Yeah.
Like, what's the point of putting up a notice in English if people speak Spanish and their English isn't very good? I mean, how is that a problem? How is that intrusive?
Exactly. And it's not. And that question, I think, shows the exact point, which is that there's no real burden here. I mean, you know, we're talking about undue burdens, even if we're not talking about undue burdens. And, you know, a little extra font and some extra verbiage in a different language to make sure a disclosure is effective, completely fine. And again, I mean, when you're dropping 18 grand on pay-per-click, I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's depressing.
Oh, that was another point. I'll just say one more thing is, you know, they wanted to talk about this as, you know, these are nonprofits. They do this out of the goodness of the heart of their heart. And we talked about this. Like, nonprofit is, you know, that's some shady stuff there. I mean, they may not be a for-profit center. And the state of California's answer, I thought, was pretty great on this. They said basically, well, for-profit healthcare centers aren't in the business of serving poor patients.
Ooh, like, that well, is a good
yeah.
point.
I mean, you yeah. know, yeah. why are you targeting nonprofits? Well, because for-profits don't do this by their business
right,
model.
Right. That's interesting. That's yeah. very interesting.
So.
Well, that's it for us, law nerds. I think we're going to end here. You should probably take a look at rewire.news in the upcoming hours. I'm sure Jessica will have a piece up explaining what she saw. And if you have any questions about this case or really any other of the cases that we've talked about over the course of our Boom Lawyered season, feel free to check us out at the Team Legal hashtag on Twitter and Facebook. You can find me at Angry Black Lady on Twitter. You can find Jessica at Hegemommy, H-E-G-E-M-O-M-M-Y. And you can join our Facebook group, Boom Lawyered, where if you have any questions, we'll be sure to keep the conversation going over there. So thank you for listening.
Thank you so much. And Imani, thanks for jumping in and talking about the case with me.
Oh, it's always my pleasure.
Boom Lawyered is created and hosted by Imani Gandhi and Jessica Mason Piclo. The show is produced by Nora Hurley. Our executive producer is Mark Folletti, and Rewire's editor-in-chief is Jody Jacobson.